Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 11th of October, recording at 9:45 p.m., and that's still British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's just talk a little bit about some of the excitement, incredible excitement, that we have had very recently. Now, the main story, as I'm sure most of you are very aware, is that with all the talk of QE tapering the quantitative easing, and specifically that the Fed has been operating, investors have been apprehensive, markets having become quite pricey, earlier this year relative to the levels that we saw towards the end of last year, had been choppy for sure. And while we have a certain degree, inevitably, of uncertainty about quantitative easing, and let alone the actual tapering, part of that is because this has never really occurred before, not in exactly the same way. And also, though, I will just add that the overall and background that we've seen really for the last better part of 14 years in stock markets, what Owen and I have also referred to repeatedly as a valuation contraction cycle following the ending of that last secular bull market in 1999. And that has the choppiness, not to mention the bear market big shakeout led by tech stocks back in 2000, and then even more importantly, the severe crunch in 2008 and early 2009, has scared many investors to death, not surprisingly, well, nearly to death, hopefully, only. And what we've seen subsequently has been a plethora of bearish forecasts, all sorts of warnings coming from all different quarters. I get emails coming in practically on a daily basis listing the next warning that they've seen, and of course I see plenty of them myself overall. Maybe a few less in recent months compared to what we were seeing last year, but there have still been plenty of them and I'm still receiving them. And basically, that's a contrary indicator. That is telling us that a lot of people are still on the sidelines or somewhat underinvested or, more likely, invested in bond markets where that really reliable, persistent 31-year bull market was underway but has now clearly ended, in my opinion, when we look at the price charts. So, against that background, frayed investor nerves, all those warnings, that is a positive contrary indicator in my opinion. And it is also matched by an even, well, I see even exceeded by the very, very important fundamental tailwind, which is, of course, the low interest rates and the continuing quantitative easing. And over my decades in the markets, I have learned and relearned, or I found that reinforced, that there's no indicator that I regard as more important than monetary policy. And when it's tightening, it eventually becomes a killer. And when, in terms of bull market trends, and when it is accommodative, it is a good, strong tailwind which cushions downward moves and also supports runs to new highs. And we have had the most exceptionally accommodative monetary policy since that 2008 stock market crash. Now, that will change at some point in the future, but one of the reasons why we've seen this dramatic recovery, well, there are two reasons, actually. One was this dramatic rally here this week. One of those reasons was, in case you haven't had a chance to check on today's markets, we had nice upside follow-through in here today. But this is a situation where investors, let me start again on that point. The first biggest concern was the U.S. impasse, this ridiculous thing between the Republicans and the Democrats, but scary because it has consequences, and it was unnerving investors all over the world. And as such, it will have shaved a little bit off GDP growth overall. Not a whole lot, I don't think, but it did some damage, and it was a stressful distraction overall. Well, I think the U.S. politicians have now been shamed into first this furlough that we actually see. They've rolled the date out for the debt ceiling, and have given a partial increase. But this is not going to end in any kind of default, in my opinion. They will, having tried everything else, they'll do the right thing and come to some sort of reassuring agreement here. So that is off the table in terms of being a major, major negative preoccupation for investors. And then the other factor, which I want to touch on again, is that having long felt that investors had long felt that the QE tapering was going to commence. Indeed, most of the Fed, it appears, if the articles on this are accurate, themselves were feeling that the QE tapering was actually going to commence because they felt that the global economy and the U.S. economy would be stronger overall. Well, we know that we do get this choppy, we have seen a continuation of this choppy, modest recovery, and that is good news, but it's not robustly good news. So the tapering has been postponed to at least December of this year, in my opinion, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if Janet Yellen didn't move the tapering into the next year, 2014. So, again, stock markets are celebrating that. It has been a big sigh of relief. When I say celebrating that, that's probably missing out on one of the key components in here. There's no doubt that yesterday and today we have seen a massive amount of short covering. So I think a lot of these big institutional traders in particular had some significant hedge shorts in place because of the U.S. situation and the probability of tapering. And they've been scrambling in here for the last couple of days, which has scrambling to get out of those short positions, and that has led to the explosive moves to the upside. Now, that will also attract in a bit of long buying, of course, from people who were underweight overall, and the this would carry into next week, I suspect, and then we'll get a bit overbought in the short term, where we're becoming a bit overbought in the short term, and that demand will be temporarily exhausted, and we'll get some ranging and setbacks and so on. But overall, I maintain that those warnings that we have been seeing for the last 4 years they remain too pessimistic, and I do not see a bear market unfolding in here, and at least not for any of the reasons that you and I can see on the horizon. And I think, therefore, that we will get further ranging, but also with strong stocks or fashionable stocks, and there are plenty of both, seeing some additional moves to the upside overall. And it's not a bad environment. I've been saying that for some time overall. And that that remains the case overall. Now, no doubt there will be more wobbles when the tapering actually does commence, but I think that the draconian forecasts about what might happen then are probably and hopefully wide of the mark overall. Okay, so then what happens? I've maintained that we would see several years of ranging somewhat above the old highs. If you look at a long-term charts, put up, for instance, semi-log charts of the Dow and the S&P, and go back 50 years, and you will notice that that's exactly what happened from the late 1960s, some big bear markets, including the slump that we saw in 1973 and 1974, which terrified absolutely everyone. They thought it was the end of the world. And then you got into the late 70s and early 80s, and we were in a trading range that was mostly above the old highs. And then that morphed into the secular bull market, which really began, I feel, around mid-1982. Now, that secular bull market was punctuated by some bearish phases, not least 87, which terrified everybody once again. But you look at that on the long-term charts, and it looks like a minor event. Well, it was pretty dramatic, wasn't it, for a few days, and the fears lingered on overall. But not to digress, I think that we are in the ranging phase, mostly above former highs of the last few years for many indices, not all the indices. We, for instance, have had some serial underperformers until more recently, such as Europe, and I'll say more about that in a moment. But that this ranging that I've been talking about will go on and turn into the next secular bull market that that I have been talking about. So we have quite a few similarities in terms of the technical action from that late 1960 period through to 82, although the fundamental background is quite different, as it always is, from one cycle to another, and I'll come back to that point. I'm just returned to Europe, and Europe's astonishing performance. Well, let's tip our hats here to Mario Draghi, a superb central banker and politician, and he has done a phenomenal job there. We all know that Europe has plenty of remaining problems. You know, how does it generate the economic growth, and how does it deal with the far different conditions that exist between the northern economies in the European Union and the southern economies. But when you consider the forecasts that we were getting over the last few years, right on up until this year, they were dire, weren't they? Well, fortunately, we did not buy into that talk of breakup of the euro and complete collapse of the system overall, largely because you could see the success that Mario Draghi was actually having. And now Europe is, well, hey, it's a fashionable region for investors, isn't it? And the reality was that valuations were low, and Europe also has a number of autonomies, and they've been doing quite well. And overall, if there's one big theme, well, there are many big themes, but one of the important big themes of the last few years is that many companies, particularly the big multinational companies, have been doing much, much better than their respective governments. And that's understandable. The governments have been in the position of taking on the dodgy debts, the corporations mostly coming from banks. The successful companies have initially gone into survival mode. They streamlined, they reduced personnel, they've invested in technology, and they are doing very, very well in this overall global economy. And it is a much bigger, much more diversified global economy than when the last secular bull market began. If I just could drop back to 1982 for a minute, the beginning of that last secular bull market, and you think, okay, where were all the opportunities? Well, you had the US, Canada, you had Europe, you had, well, you had developed Europe, you had Australia, and Japan was an emerging market. And that was pretty much it. The rest of Asia was kind of frontier market, if that. Well, look at the world here today. So a successful multinational company, the autonomies, they are in a very, very strong position to benefit from this environment overall. Now, just one cautionary note on the autonomies, and I've said this, I can't remind myself enough of this important enough times of this important point. When those autonomies, and I feel that they are going to be the dominant, safer plays for the next few decades at least, when they are highly fashionable and are surging well above rising 200-day moving averages. You know they're getting overextended. You can see that on a chart. And if you don't want to ride out the next reaction, mean reversion back to the 200-day moving average, then you want to be lightening some positions. If you hold on, you will need to do so in the knowledge that you will see a temporary erosion of gains. And the point is, sell on the overextended strength of the upside if you're going to sell, not when we've already had a reaction and people are beginning to get quite cautious here once again. Okay, so what are the seeds of this next secular bull market? Well, the veteran subscribers will know all about that. And we have to have some real fundamental factors to fuel a secular bull market, obviously. And we also have to get beyond all the QE tapering. So I'm assuming that when the next secular bull market is underway, that will be out of the way. We'll be back into a more normal growth period. And as you know, it takes at least 5 to 7 years to get back to normal growth. So when people are saying, well, QE hasn't helped very much, we haven't seen much growth at all, I'm not impressed with that argument. It takes longer for economies to recover, and we've avoided what would have been immensely traumatic collapse had we not had the QE, in my opinion. But okay, those drivers of the next secular bull. Technological innovation, that's certainly going to be number one at play. I think that will be incredibly exciting. It's already incredibly exciting. I think this is the most exciting time to be alive, because if you just look back 10 years ago and look at the technological advancements that we've actually seen, well, this trend is actually accelerating, and there's no reason why it should stop accelerating. It will stop accelerating at some point, but hopefully not until the very distant future. But it will happen because of exogenous events, not because technology runs out of the capacity to go on accelerating in terms of the refinements, enhancements, and overall growth and development that is actually taking place. So it'll be some other factor that will eventually end that. But hopefully not, as I say, not for any reason that we can see on the horizon, and hopefully not for a good long time. And the major beneficiaries of that, well, we're all beneficiaries, but corporations, it is heaven sent for these corporations, because it makes them more and more and more efficient. There is a negative trade-off in terms of employment, though. But I've mentioned that, and I'm going to run out of time, so I don't want to dwell on that factor too much. But we're replacing jobs more quickly than we can create. When I say we, the global economy can create new jobs. But government policies are going to be a big factor here, influencing that. And I would argue that while inevitably there are some things that we can praise the Obama administration for, I'm particularly glad that he didn't lob missiles into the Middle East earlier this month. But I think in terms of economic policy, it's basically redistributive. It's putting more costs on corporations. It's slowing growth. And when you slow growth, those corporate CEOs are going to be in the position, well, if we've just got this new cost, whether it's Obamacare or taxes or whatever it is, he says, if I've just lost this many millions or billions, how am I going to make that back up? And it's usually the poorest in society who are the ones who are caught out by that, and it certainly does increase unemployment, as we've seen. But okay, let's get back to this secular bull cycle, which is on the cards, in my opinion. Another precondition that I think is important is that we need to see affordable energy costs. Now, some countries' energy costs today are a lot more affordable than others. The United States has led the way on this. It's shown what needs to be done. We don't want to be insensitive about the risks of climate change. But equally, it would be far worse, I believe, to bankrupt our economies, or if that's too dramatic a way to put it, to make our economies uncompetitive because we are so worried about the human contribution to global warming. I think we need to be concerned about that risk, but I also have said before that technology is going to be the best solution to that, not throwing our economies into recession because of extremely expensive subsidies for energy policies. It's a big topic. I'm not going to stay on that any longer, but you know my views. And what I do feel will take place, though, increasingly, is that, again, we can thank technology for this, but the skill in terms of fracking, more countries will be adopting that. I'm awfully glad that the U.S. is, the U.K. rather, is belatedly making a push in that direction. And technology will help us to not only find, but to retrieve the fossil fuels that we are going to require, and a lot of that will be natural gas, and that's extremely good because it's far less of a pollutant than coal and other conventional sources of energy. But affordable energy costs is a major plank, a major requirement for this next secular bull market. And I think the combination of solar energy in particular becoming less expensive overall in the future, and I think also supplies of conventional and both unconventional oil and gas, that will hopefully do the job. But again, not all countries are benefiting equally from this, and I think we need to see further progress in individual countries creating those or creating that affordable energy environment. And then the third big plank, I think, on this is what I've already touched on, but it's the rise and rise of middle classes around the globe. And that is very, very significant, and the autonomies are the prime beneficiaries of that overall. But the whole world benefits from it in terms of actual economic growth capability. Okay, what else about what's going on in the rest of the world here? Well, the long-dated government bonds, a very different story there. We do not want to see surges in those long-dated interest rates, for sure. And we did get a surge from May into September. And that creates a little bit of a early headwind, did create a little bit of a headwind that affected consumers. And we've seen as the evidence of slower growth unfolded, and or not as strong growth as people were forecasting, and that momentum move to the upside ran out of steam for those yields. We've seen yields back off. And for instance, take that U.S. 10-year government bond yield, which got up to briefly over the 3% level, moved up from 1.6 to up over 3, and then pulled back to around the 2.6 level, and it's a little above that right now, around 2.65 here. This looks like a medium-term corrective phase. Hopefully it'll be a lengthy medium-term corrective phase. In other words, not get another surge to the upside anytime too soon. I don't think we'll get a plunge back down in those bond yields, because I do think that the global economy is recovering slowly and will continue to recover slowly for the next few years before we get back to a normal and stronger overall growth trajectory as that next secular bull trend gets underway. Following that medium-term consolidation that I'm talking about for these long-dated government bond yields, we will see them push higher, and that will be a pattern that we will likely see over at least the next decade, and probably the next couple of decades. It's way too soon to say how high they will go. But what you do know, as near as a certainty as you can get, near we can say that a big secular bull market in long-dated government bonds, that was that long fall in the yields of those bonds, which is extended by the quantitative easing, that inevitably will or has established the conditions for a bear trend, a lengthy bear trend, which is underway. Now, again, it's all in the timing. How quickly do rates move up? When do they actually move up? But these are things that we will be discussing as we go forward here. Now, what else is of interest very much on people's minds? Well, I should talk about the currencies here for a little bit. I'm very much of the view that we will have a reasonable amount of stability in terms of currencies. It's not a difficult forecast to make because currencies are actually less volatile than other asset classes. As you will have probably noticed, they are heavily managed. Governments will not want to be in the position of having an overly strong currency while there are all these competitive pressures from globalization. And that's a good factor because it does help to keep down those competitive costs. And I would expect more of the same overall, but you know that it's fashionable for people to come out and forecast that the euro is going to collapse or that something else is actually going to soar. Those will be the exceptions, and the exceptions will be much less likely in the developed country, among the developed country currencies overall. The big themes here, I think, really have been, we saw a temporary rout in a number of emerging market currencies following the devaluation of the yen, which was much needed by Japan because it had had an overwhelmingly strong currency for far too many years. But I think the worst of that crisis is actually over. But keep an eye on the Indian rupee. It has actually been firming and had a good day yesterday, for instance. The other big currency story, well, I've already touched on that. It was the yen, the determination of the current Japanese government to prevent that crunching deflationary pressure from continuing to drain the Japanese economy. What I do suspect, though, is that as we get into the stronger phase of growth that I anticipate, that I expect to be seeing, probably before the end of this decade, as we're seeing evidence of that secular bull trend for equities unfolding as well, I think that the U.S. dollar will gradually, eventually move up out of what is now its developing base formation. The U.S. certainly doesn't want a stronger dollar here right now, and has taken measures to contain it, but the advantages that the U.S. has in terms of competitive energy prices being very much at the forefront of technological innovation and having the biggest selection of autonomies overall, that is a strong platform, and that will lead to some upward pressure on the U.S. dollar overall. I would say. I'm really talking, you know, a few years from now, seeing that, and that it's a trend that we'll see carrying on once it starts for a decade or more, just as we had a multi-decade decline in the U.S. dollar, not least as U.S. Labor costs became increasingly uncompetitive relative to some of the more productive emerging economies. Now, let's take precious metals, because they have a currency status, not something that we go out and buy our groceries with, but you know what I mean. These are very traditional stores of value that tend to hold their wealth over the very long term. You wouldn't know that looking at what happens over the space of a few years, because really in the last decade and a half, you know, we've seen a big bull market, and we've also seen certainly a cyclical bear market here in the last 2 years or more. And I think the key point here on this is that gold, when gold is regarded, and I think we can be objective about this as well, when gold is objectively regarded as cheap, then there are all sorts of reasons that people will use to buy it, starting with the fact that it's cheap, the fact that it's hard money, the fact that it's not correlated to that many other investments, the fact that it is also sometimes regarded as a hedge against disaster, you know, go on and on. But those apply, all those factors apply when we can, as I say, objectively say that gold is cheap or at least not expensive. Now, given the move that we had to the upside, in gold, and gold, I think objectively and clearly on the technical action, became really quite expensive, because for a number of years it outperformed just about everything else. Silver, of course, doing even better, but silver is always high beta gold. Well, when gold is regarded generally as more expensive, then all the reasons that we can cite for buying gold and holding gold when it is cheap no longer apply. And more expensive gold is really harder to justify in terms of when you're looking at your overall asset allocation. It's only a justifiable buy if you're wanting a hedge against some sort of disaster. Now, lots of disasters have been forecast. Far more disasters have been forecast than actually occur. And I think that's an environment that will persist for really quite some time. So we've seen that big correction in the overall gold price, and we now want to watch how that compares with the average cost of production. And I think we've reached a stage now, I think Owens also commented on this in his comment of the day, that where a number of smaller, more marginal mines really are unlikely to be producing gold. They'll either be absorbed or go under if we see the price of gold move all that much much lower. So my feeling is that we are probably closer to a floor area than a ceiling, which was up near the old high of 2-3 years ago, but certainly gold is not performing, and it's not performed in here in here today, and we're still getting some stale bull liquidation of bullion positions. And I think that's something that is likely to continue here overall. And will be an important story. Last but not least, we have in a difficult weather environment for crops over the last 8 years, this year has been a reasonably good one for crops overall. And I'm not going to try to predict the weather, but hopefully we will get a little bit more of that just on the long-term odds of evening out between bad weather conditions for a sustained period versus somewhat better weather conditions overall. And global change can cut both ways if we're actually getting significant climate change. I think we're getting some gradual climate change, but my point is that warmer, somewhat more moist conditions will obviously help crops in some regions. But the good news here is that 2013 has been better for crops than the preceding 6 or 7 years, and that is another factor helping to keep inflationary pressures under control. All right. The other story is the Fuller Money development, but I've already alerted you to that in yesterday's comment of the day, as Fuller Money will convert into FT money. That's for Fuller Tracy. And we will have new partners, very experienced, successful business people, techie savvy people, and it will lead to the developments in our service that we have long wanted. Owen and I have long wanted on behalf of our subscribers. I hope we have a mostly smooth transition. I hope we have a very smooth transition over the next few weeks. Certainly a lot of time and effort and money has gone into trying to assure that, but there are inevitable uncertainties, and we'll try to keep any problems to a minimum. And I think a few months down the road, I hope you'll love what we're doing. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.